Okay. Today's big question, who wrote the hymns? And formerly there were two ways of looking at it, right, about the 1600s, 1700s. And that was the Protestant view and the Catholic view. And the Protestants at that time, and the writers of Luther's own time, just assumed right off, without even thinking about it, that Luther had written them, had created totally new methods, and had literally made the dumb to speak. And they see the hymns as something composed of totally novel elements. The Catholics, on the other hand, of course, won't allow Luther any originality. Say that all of this was contained in former hymns. And one thing that you should know if you ever get into an argument with Catholics about the writing of these hymns is that you should be familiar with the name of a hymn book called the Songbook of Anne of Cologne, which was printed in 1500. Because many of the lines in this hymn are identical with Luther's and precede him by 20 years, almost 30. But many musicologists answer to that at that time you didn't put out a whole new edition of a songbook. What you did was you gathered up all the ones you could find and printed new songs on the blank pages, which are always left for that purpose. So that's sort of a in-between question. They haven't found any songbooks with blank pages still in them. Means they would have had to have been gathered up pretty effectively, or pretty thoroughly. One interesting thing about sort of a postscript to that period is that the Catholics and the Lutherans, right at the time of the Reformation, who were involved in music, got along terrifically. A great friend. Luther's most trusted musical advisor, next to Johann Walter, was a Catholic named Ludwig Zenfel, who is fairly well known even now. Loud choirs are still singing his works. But what would happen would be the Protestants composed masses and motets for the Catholics, and the Catholics arranged chorales for the Protestants. And this sort of friendly interchange was really encouraged terrifically by Luther. He thought this was really wonderful. And, but of course this didn't last long. A counter-reformation came, and any kind of friendship that existed to that time was really wiped away. And all of the horrors of that war. I remember, in Berlin, which was pretty much, which was fairly centralized in Germany, slightly north. But, so many churches, some of the most beautiful churches, you know, you'll go by ruins after ruins after ruins. And it'll say, this church contained, this church was rebuilt, destroyed in the 30 Years' War. They all have this outside, destroyed in the 30 Years' War, destroyed in the 30 Years' War. And Germany was just overrun and just destroyed. There's one piece of stained glass in the Middle Ages in Berlin, a window this size, the only one that escaped in that period. And that wasn't from the Second World War that those were destroyed. That was from the 30 Years' War.
When was it that 30 Years' War in the
1800s? That was, that began about 1548, I think. It went on from there. I think what I'll do in terms of whether or not Luther wrote these hymns is first give the argument against him having written them, and then the argument for his having written them. And one of the biggest arguments against it...
Wouldn't it bother you too much? Were you upset or fine?
Oh no, go ahead. I'm still asleep. Nobody got woken up by the Times this morning. Down to about 1600, there were no real hymns.
Oh.
Down to that time, there were only what were called hymn setters, or tune setters. There were people writing music, but the job of anyone composing a hymn was simply to use the old sources. Any new hymns that the Catholic Church added were used. The words, of course, were new, but the music was the music of the Gregorian chair, simply slightly altered to fit the words, number of syllables. So they claim that it was none of Luther's business, really, that he and his musical assistants, what they were to do were to take melodies of all sorts with which they were familiar, alter them to the meter of the new hymns, and add the harmonies. And it wasn't until the later part of the 1500s that the modern method of inventing melody really began. Another thing used often against the idea of him having written them is Luther's own admitted adherence to the old forms of music and to his adherence to old forms in general. And remember that in first Luther's liturgic reforms, he himself regarded as a purification, definitely not destroying any old forms. He was conscious of the prayers and hymns of the church and the beauty of them. And in the preface to the German Mass of 1526, Luther writes, "This I will not abandon or have altered, but as we have kept it with us heretofore, so must we still be free to use the same where and when it pleases us or occasion requires. I will by no means allow the Latin speech to be dropped out of the divine worship, since it is important for the youth. And if I were able and the Greek and Hebrew languages were as common with us as the Latin, and had as much music and song as the Latin has, we should have masses, sing and read every Sunday in all four languages, German, Latin, Greek, and Hebrew." The Mass, of course, is almost entirely composed in German. But it was not Luther's purpose in this, to add my 2 cents worth at that point, to impose by authority the means of worship, because he says also in an earlier part of that preface that this matter would be one that you could alter from area to area. It would depend on the community of a certain district. So he left this open for personal freedom in the manner of worship. Also, the very largest reason of the church is that the germ of the hymns is found in the Gregorian chant. "A mighty fortress is our God" is extremely close. The Gregorian chant used, but of course doesn't have the same words, but the melody goes something like this. I'm still not wide awake enough to sing that. But it's, "A mighty fortress is our God." It goes very closely to the other. There's not a great deal of difference there when you take out ornamentation. And of course I've added those words to fit onto it. And also the fact that many of the hymns are definitely old Gregorian chants, unchanged, and old folk songs. The question of whether Luther wrote the hymns or not really only applies to about 5. The other 30 are definitely based on old songs. But 5 of them, which included the most important one, as far as authorship goes, is "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." The arguments for... I have a few more of those because I've become slightly more convinced that it is possible to call him an author of music, even with the small amount of information that we have. First, we know that Luther was extremely accomplished on the lute, and if you've ever seen a lute, you know that that's extremely hard to play. A guitar is like playing a comb with wax paper on it compared with a loop. There's absolutely no comparison in difficulty. It's not something you take up. Well, it's something like the violin. You're either very bad at it, you know, or you can play it well. You know. And there's nothing worse than a violin that's mediocre. And Luther was extremely good on the lute. We know he entertained people many times for an entire evening. Also, argument four is that composer and author at this time were the same person always. They didn't make a distinction. You didn't write a text and then wait for somebody to come along and put music to it. You automatically did that yourself. And the line between creativity and plagiarism was nowhere near what it is today, of course, with mass communication, what it is, the record industry. Anything that sounds even slightly like anything else is immediately called plagiarism. At this time, even Bach, for that matter, Handel, all the Baroque composers, even in the 17th and 18th centuries, made no qualms at all about borrowing anybody else's tune and adding it. And in what sense do we call Bach a composer then when we listen to chorale preludes, which sometimes run for 20 or 30 minutes and are based on a hymn tune? He didn't write the hymn tune. And many, as far as the musical part argument goes for it, many of the tones exhibit musical traits fairly novel and very different from those found in Bohemian hymnary, which we talked about 2 days ago, which contained 400 hymns and preceded Luther by 20 years. First, there's a preface, or preference, I mean, for disjunct rather than conjunct movement. And by this we mean something like so. In the Gregorian chant, when you sing, don't make a leap that from here to here. Only very rarely, extremely rarely. Notes follow one another, so up and down. But no, maybe it's based on the dip. One missing note here that would be on the piano, right between G and G after G there. You can just move right along up and down. Luther, on the other hand, a lot of times has a distance of a fourth or a fifth in music. Now, these only mean the difference between any two notes on the piano. For instance, here's the piano, or the middle of the E, D, E, F, G, A. 1, 2, 3, 4. So this is from here to here, it's all a fourth. So from here to here, it's a fourth. And an octave, so this time the same note again here. The two keys at one time. Latin, this means eighth, so that's the eighth. This is commonly known as octave. And this, in a lot of ways, is in keeping with what we know of his own temperament. Many times, the hymn starts on the highest note of the scale, way up, often here. Or here, the mighty fortress, I think, in the hymnal starts on the G, which is not an easy note to begin on. And since the hymns in the hymn book, the Reformation ones of Luther, have been lowered down from approximately here, in many cases. Now, imagine, someone with a voice like mine, the mighty fortress is our God from someplace here. A mighty fortress! Way up there at the top of the air. And then jumping up and down. And then of course when it gets
bum, 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 bum. That's pretty ordinary, this is down we go. Also, the scale at this time was in the transition period. The scale is a Gregorian chant, the mix of Lydian, Lydian, Gregorian, these scales which do not contain eight notes and are not based on 12 tones like ours, 12 tones simply being C, D, E, F, G, A, D, and the flats or sharps in between. So C, C sharp, E, D sharp, E, F. If you count those up, you have a choice of 12 there. At this time, they have started having what came to be known as the well-tempered scale, which is why the title of Bach's work, The Well-Tempered Books, or Studies for the Well-Tempered Clavier, came into being, which is the scale we know, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C. Well, I wanted to make a comment
about
this.
That's not picking you up, but you're going to stay here.
I'll just move it over.
I won't be here much longer. The comment that I made last night, this is the semi-breve of which music was written, and for a long time it was assumed that this was a whole note, or many hymnals that were put out in the 19th century, assumed automatically that that was a whole note, and so the hymns were translated into whole notes. And that's why they sing A Mighty Fortress Is Our God at such an unbelievably awful slow pace. And if there's one thing we definitely know about Reformation music, then that was that these hymns were sung terrifically fast, much faster, approximately the way I played it last night, even slightly faster. This is the measure of the human heart at rest. One beat of the heart being equal to this, and then this being doubled. This is the half mark of that. They didn't write in musical measures as we know them, cutting things up like so, but in the phrases. And I'll get to that in a minute, at the top of the numbers on the top of the hymns by the title that indicate the number of syllables. You see these figures every once in a while, and just about every hymn, I think, might fill up. So most of Luther's are in the pattern of 8, 7, 8, 7, 6, 6, and I think he goes 5, and then 7 again at the end. And these also have a bearing, I'll get to in a minute, on the speed of the hymn. One interesting thing about this too is that many of these melodies are extremely complicated. This is something, also an argument against in some ways, is that these hymns were not easy to sing. In other words, what we have now, these isometric hymns as they're called, with soprano, alto, tenor, bass, everybody singing at the same time, harmonized, were definitely not known. That was something that would have been regarded as really terrible at that time. That would have made for the ugliest sounding hymn, and it does. These hymns were much more beautiful sung in the manner they were at that time. Although I'm definitely not offended by the way they appear now. It's a lot easier to sing. But syncopation was what was used. The soprano did not have the melody, the tenor did. And the tenor's voice was, of course, lower. The way in which the tenor was brought out was, well, I guess I have to go back again. Let's say the tenor singing, well, let's say about here, around this area. And there's soprano, bass, here. And I didn't use a whole lot of alto, sort of in between woman's voice. These would sort of run up and down very quickly in very elaborate passages all over the scale, while the tenor would sing the melody, and they would do it in such a way that it would be syncopated. And that, in other words, would be to give it that sort of stop and go motion. In other words, a syncopation would be if I clapped so and sang something like that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a syncopation. The tenor's part would be syncopated in this manner, and the Catholics would claim absolutely impossible. What congregation not used to singing is ever going to be able to learn that? That's an extremely complicated item. Oh, one that I want to add that for sure was written by Martin Luther, that nobody questions this, and that was "From Heaven on High to Earth I Come," which is pretty much regarded as having been written for his son. And from what you mentioned last night, singing in its cradle, that I'm thoroughly convinced that he wrote that one absolutely. Anyone who says he doesn't know what they're talking about, so you can tell them that for me. Against the argument of the people being unable to sing that, we can't judge the musical ability of the people at that time, and I really think that their ability at singing hymns was far greater than ours. For one thing, simply because I think they would have had a much easier time learning them. Remember first that Luther gave these first to the choir, and people heard them for a good deal of time before they sung them. Also, the excitement of the time and the great desire to sing them in any event, you know, the whole new idea of singing was so much fun that I think people paid a lot more attention to, you know, not only the words, which Luther definitely did, but to the singing of them in general was given a lot of attention. In the 1600s, when these hymns began to change somewhat, the part other than tenor was given to the organ, which by that time the choir was beginning to disappear, was beginning to lose its purpose. The organ at that time began to become, for the people of the 17th century and 18th century, their type of space-age technology. What's so exciting for us in going to the moon was so exciting for them in the building of an organ. That was something that was really, that incorporated so many pieces of technology, and as you know, as a result, look at the masterpieces of organ building. They come up with huge, unbelievable machines. I think that's about all of the proofs on either side for or against. Some of the German churches now are trying to restore the hymns to the manner in which they were originally sung. It's not greatly different. For instance, in "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," it's mostly a matter of ornamentation and speed. The speed is kept up, the melody is the same, but there are many grace notes, little in-between notes plugged in between many of these. At most, a run of, say, three notes. You might sing, "A Mighty," so. It was in the 17th century, 18th century, I mean, that these hymns got the form we know them in today. It's sort of an interesting idea, but I wish they would change the translation, you know, and leave the melody the way it is. It's really, really not bad. So, who do you think wrote the hymns? Oh, yeah. in the poetry or lines of Luther, it's not, that's often his main concern, not so much the choice of accent or the choice of rhyme, but that the line have the same number of syllables. And despite the number of syllables in a line, for instance in the first, which has 8, you have to sing that at the same speed in which you would sing the one of 5. And there's some hymns that have 10 syllables, which is a lot. Let's see if I got that right. A mighty fortress is our God. I think the next one should be 8 too. A bulwark never failing, no 7. Right. So, the first, we sing, A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing, then we sing the next one the same. They would sing the first one and the second one within the same amount of time. The second one, or the first one, would have to be speeded up, so what you do is you take the one with the most number of syllables and speed that up to match it with the one with the least. When I first got here, and I was even then thinking about this, that I was pretty convinced that Luther didn't write the hymns, but I don't know. When you consider the Gregorian chant of the time, and that even the slightest variation, first that you had your hands in a sacred office, an extremely sacred office, much more sacred than singing it, as you're writing it now, which calls for a lot of theological approval, and that any change of any kind is really radical. That it's a matter of degree, I think, and that just in the sort of jumping around phrases of Luther's and many of the hymns, in where he chooses to start, melodies, even though partly Gregorian, that are used, I think I would really accept him as an author. In the same sense as I would accept Bach as the author, despite the fact that a chorale, for instance, has a definite formula for its being made. You make a chorale prelude according to definite rules of a definite length that you don't have any choice about. So. Up a little past 9.
Tom, have you ever been into the interpretation of that melody of the Great Fortress of the using the 3 trumpet calls of the
first three notes
of the trumpet calls?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that a little yesterday. That's.
I hear about that. I wonder if
that's. Yeah, I've never found any writings on it, but it would seem, reasonable to me, even though because the Gregorian chant doesn't really have those 3 notes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 1946, the organist magazine, they had an article by, I think, a Jesuit on whether Martin Luther gets the melody for White Horses.
What did he say?
Well, that was because you see those 3 notes were used during World War II for the Sound of Victory.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Beethoven picked up in his Fifth Symphony, and that's the reason for that. But where did it originally come from? And he researched out that there's 2 different trumpet calls. There's the one that is like on Blot Bang, and then the ones that are making that first movement in the Roman tactics. They had that deeper note. You had that high note for the first, when the fellows are reading the midst of it and we're getting deep. And then that was the thing that the leader would have encircled them to start their attack from the rear. And the enemy was overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So the old note of victory from way back in Roman times is when the Luther picked up the lead.
Now that seems to me the sort of thing that he would use, because his music generally corresponds so well to his text, which is really another reason. in many places, you know, where it would suddenly, you know, like in last night's hymn, the one line, you ask who that may be, you know, suddenly up we go, you know, because Jesus Christ is He, you know, up goes the music. You know. Tomorrow, I'll bring hymnals for everybody, and tomorrow what we're going to do is just look at the hymnal some and talk about what's it good for anymore. What do we sing hymns for? Why should we sing hymns at all? And any questions at all? What's a hymn in terms of, you know, why is it that we sing? What's a hymn have to do with a Christian imagination? And topics of this sort.
Thomas Mann, just before his death, had an interview with Time Magazine. He said he had a news about movies. He saw the words in that spot. But he said once in that he was one of the great musical geniuses of all time.
Hmm.
So it's interesting that he was recorded.
Well, for those who have been here during this period, you may want to stretch a little bit.